Psalms 129, and I'll begin reading at verse number 1. Many a time have they afflicted me from my youth, may Israel now say. Many a time have they afflicted me from my youth, yet they have not prevailed against me. The plowers plowed upon my back, they made long their furrows. The Lord is righteous, he hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. Let them be confounded and turn back that hate Zion. Let them be as the grass upon the housetops, which withereth afore it groweth up. Wherewith the mower filleth not his hand, nor he that bindeth sheaves his bosom. Together in verse 8. Neither do they which go by say, the blessing of the Lord be upon you. We bless you in the name of the Lord. Now, as we've been preaching through these individual psalms, my goal has been really to preach what the psalm is about, not to try to develop a sermon from the psalm, but preach the psalm. I've not tried to just pull out one verse and just preach on that, but what is the kind of what's going on in the psalm? How did they look at it? How did they use it? And how is it for us today? So we've looked at a little bit of the history and stuff as we've kind of laid a foundation. We won't do that as much today. But I say that all to say that one of the things I think that Psalms is such a blessing to God's people is because they wrote these Psalms and they were very much tied to their experiences. And the truth is we experience the same thing today. And so they're emotionally charged. They are heavy sometimes. Sometimes they are redundant because the truth is it would be nice if you only had one battle your entire life and that was it. But that's not the way it is. And so a lot of times they're redundant because they kept going through the same battles. But we're going to look at Psalms 129 tonight, the 10th Ascension Psalm. Let's pray and we'll get right into it. Father, I pray now that you bless the preacher of your word. And that is my goal, that's my desire, that is my prayer tonight. We're not looking for a good sermon, we're looking for a helpful sermon. A sermon that speaks to our heart. And for that to happen, Lord, that requires you. I can talk to ears if they listen, but I can't talk to hearts. You talk to hearts, and we ask that you talk to hearts tonight. Now we ask for these things in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. I've said this quote probably a bunch of times. I'm sure you've heard me say it a bunch of times. What is the difference between life now, living today, versus life then, whenever then is, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years ago? And I would tell you, there's not much different. Technology changes, maybe some governments change, but life itself is basically the same. And I've used this quote by Brother Hiles, same play, different actors. I think that's very true as you think about what we experience and what previous time periods have experienced. Now hold your place in Psalms, and just so you say, well, that's nice that he said it, but is that really biblical? Well, go with me just a little bit to your right, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Because even though Brother Hiles said it, and I've quoted it, but the reason it's relevant and true is because the Bible teaches it. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1, look with me at verse number 9. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new, it hath been already of old time, which was before us. And that's the same idea we're talking about. Cell phones haven't been around forever. Laptop computers haven't been around forever. Jumbo jets haven't been around forever. But people, from 6,000 years ago creation to today, people are, guess what? People. And they've had the same problems, same difficulties. And tonight we're talking about this idea of affliction. That's what's going on in Psalms 129. Now I think this is why the Psalms can be beneficial. Even though this Psalm, Psalm 129, humanly was written 3,000 years ago basically, it is still relevant today. What is being said in Psalms 129 is just as real and just as relevant as it was 3,000 years ago. Everyone deals with afflictions. Sometimes they're physical, sometimes they're spiritual. Sometimes they're bigger, sometimes smaller, sometimes many, sometimes fewer, but we all deal with afflictions. It's always been this way. Ever since Adam and Eve sinned and sin came into the world, afflictions have been here. We've all had to deal with these. So just like these pilgrims, we face afflictions in our upward journey. As we progress towards heaven by time, and as we progress in our Christian life and growth by faith, we deal with these afflictions. So not only do we face same problems, the problem is affliction, not only do we face the same problems, and this is the key, but we also have the same solution. That's what we have to understand. So it's one thing to say, well, we all have the same problem, and that is a true statement, but let me tell you, we all have the same solution. And the solution is God and His Word. God is still alive, and God is still able. 3,000 years ago, they looked to God. Who should we look to today? God. God has always been the answer for God's people. So I want to show you three things from this psalm that hopefully would encourage you. Now, I'm not trying to be heavy. We're talking about affliction. I'm not trying to be heavy in the affliction side. But I got to talk about affliction because I want our attention to be focused on the Lord in the affliction. And so three things I want to share with you from this psalm, how I think what they're saying, how they're dealing with affliction, how they understood affliction, and how it's relevant and still true for us today. Let's go back now to Psalms 129. I want to share the first thing with you. Go with me at verse 1. Many a time have they afflicted me from my youth, may Israel now say. Many a time have they afflicted me from my youth. He's repeating it. Yet they have not prevailed against me. Now, watch this statement in verse 3. Now, understand, they're an agrarian society. So a lot of their illustrations always dealt with farming. They didn't talk about flying jets or driving cars. They talked about farming. That's what they knew. The plowers, those who are plowing, plowed upon my back. They made long their furrows. He's thinking of afflictions. He's thinking about, here is this guy plowing his field, and he's saying, that is the way my afflictions feel to me, that someone's just digging in and plowing. So here's the first thing I want to bring to your attention this evening. Number one is this, and it's going to be probably a duh type statement. You're going to say, of course. But even though it's a duh, of course, sometimes we don't maybe fully, not maybe comprehend, but maybe fully appreciate really what's going on. So number one is this, you are going to be afflicted. That's the reality of life. You are going to be afflicted. People say, well, why is life hard? Life is hard because, watch, deep theologian, took me 8 years of Bible college to figure this out. Life is hard because life is hard. That's just the reality of life. You are going to be afflicted. So we have to accept the reality of afflictions. Not just that afflictions happen. Now watch. Not just that afflictions happen, because that itself doesn't bother us. It doesn't bother us that afflictions happen. You know what bothers us? Afflictions happen to me. That's when it begins bothering me. I feel bad for your afflictions. I really don't like my afflictions. They really start bothering me. And so not just that afflictions happen in life, but afflictions happen in our life. Those are the ones that really throw us. When we see people going through afflictions, we say, oh boy, that's bad. I'll pray for them. It hurts. But when the affliction comes knocking on our door and comes and visiting at us, that's when it really kind of throws us a curve. So we have to accept the reality of afflictions. Now watch. Not only that, we have to accept the reality of multiple afflictions. Look what he said. He said, verse 1, many a time have they afflicted me. Look at verse 2. Many a time. This is not just one affliction and done. These are maybe many afflictions going on at once or all through life, different afflictions coming. So we have to accept the reality of afflictions, and also we have to accept the reality of multiple afflictions. Satan likes to use the Job method. Remember when Job was under the gun by Satan? And here's what happened. This is not what happened. I'm being sarcastic. So here's what happened. So Job's going through a problem, and Satan said, well, let me wait until you handle that. Okay, yeah, you got that problem handled. Okay, here's another problem. Well, I'm going to wait. No. Okay, now you got that handled. Is that how it happened? Isn't it kind of amazing when you read Job? Job just wakes up in the morning and someone comes beating on the door. Job, you won't believe it. Someone came and stole all your camels. I don't know the exact order of what animals were stolen, but these are the animals basically were stolen. Job, someone stole all your camels. And Job's like, oh, my camels. And then next thing, hey, Job, what? Someone stole all your donkeys. Oh, my donkeys. And then, what? Job, someone stole all my horses, all my oxen. And it was a boom, 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 one after another. You know why Satan does that? Because he's trying to knock you down. If he only gave you one, and you said, okay, I'm gonna get my bearing, and you handle it, that doesn't accomplish what he's trying to accomplish. He tries to overthrow you by a multiplicity of afflictions. Now, it may not be all like that all at once, but there will be many afflictions. Again and again, he keeps coming, and he keeps coming, and he keeps coming. The reality is this, again, not to overly discourage you, but here's the reality of it. Afflictions are going to happen till we leave this world. I think I said this Wednesday night, or last Sunday night, or something. I am 58. And again, I understand. You're saying, every time I say that, I know, I'm reading your mind. You're saying, but Pastor White, you look like you're 29. I know that. Last time I said 39. Now I'm trying 29. I'm going to keep going until I find the right age there. And you're saying, Pastor White, but you seem so young. So, I mean, we're splitting wood and they had the big hydraulic and it wasn't going fast enough. So I was just karate chopping them and breaking them in half. That was an amazing thing. That was not the case. I'm kidding. Okay, I feel young, but I'm 58. Really, as I think about life, I know most likely I only have 11 years of life, because at 70 my life insurance runs out. At 69, my wife's going to be probably thinking, should I give them any more time or not? I mean, that's a good chunk of money. So I'm going to tell you, I know my wife. I got 11 years of life left. Okay. But I'm going to tell you this, in those 11 years, my guess is I'm not done with affliction. Satan is not going to say, okay, he's old, he's getting towards the end, so we're just going to back off, he's had enough affliction in life, and we're going to let the rest of your life be okay. That is not the way Satan ever operates. He doesn't play safe, he doesn't play nice, he's never a kind, compassionate, concerning person. No matter how old you are, how young you are, no matter what you're going through, no matter how difficult today may be, he's always out to throw another affliction your way. And so there's the reality of affliction. There's reality of multiple afflictions. Now watch this. We have to accept the reality of afflictions, accept the reality of multiple afflictions. Then we have to understand this. Thirdly, we have to accept the reality of shattering afflictions. Notice what he says in verse 3. The plowers plowed upon my back. They made long their furrows, digging in deep. The plow gets in there and just keeps digging. And so too does the pain. Satan is just trying to dig as deep as he can to create as much hurt as he can to shatter you, to completely break you. He wants to devour us. Satan doesn't want to just annoy you. Satan wants to destroy you. He's trying to devour you. So not only are there afflictions, not only are there multiple afflictions, but they are shattering afflictions as well. God knows exactly how to deliver us from all of these afflictions, but in all of these cases, Satan has a purpose and a plan to destroy us, to devour us, and he always says, well, maybe I can try it here in your health, or here in your finances, or here maybe among different Christians, get them fussing with each other, maybe in this relationship, or maybe in this situation. He is trying to shatter us, trying to break us, trying to get us to turn our back on God. Remember what Job's wife said to Job? Why not just curse God and die? That's what Satan wants you to do. He wants you to turn your back. He wants to shatter your faith. Now, what's the solution? Well, here's what I would tell you. Go with me to Hebrews 4. When the afflictions come, what should we turn to? Well, there are probably many good verses in the Bible. Here's one I would point you to. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest, Hebrews 4:14. Seeing that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. That would be the opposite of giving up and quitting because of the affliction. Verse 15. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly into the throne of grace, that we obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need, times of these afflictions. So the Bible tells us that Jesus knows what we're going through, but also tells us that Jesus feels what we're going through. Now, I pointed this to you out before, and I'm going to say it again. You don't have to convince God the brokenness or the pain that you're in. He knows it as well as you know it. Sometimes we think we go to God and say, God, we're trying to convince him so he can understand. He already understands. We seek him because he knows. And we seek him because he feels. And we seek him because he knows and he feels and he can deliver. That's what the Bible says. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. So we seek the Lord in these times. Now, I had said earlier, same play, different actors. And I said what we're talking about isn't something new. So in each of these points, I have a quote. I have these quotes from these preachers who preached back in the 1600s, who preached to their people exactly the same thing I'm preaching to you. I'm going to give you a quote in each of these points. This man was named Abraham Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, preached back in the 1600s. And here's what it says. God had one son, and but one son, but never any without sorrow. In other words, God only had one son, but his son knew great sorrow. He knows how you feel. He was on this earth. He dealt with pain. He dealt with affliction. He dealt with all those things. He dealt with it. He knows what it's like. So the first thing this psalm tells us is that we're going to be afflicted. That's what these pilgrims understood. Many a times, deep plows on our back. This journey towards heaven has a lot of afflictions in it. Yes, that is true. But Jesus knows, Jesus feels, and Jesus can deliver. We can turn Him. We can pour out our heart. He knows exactly what we're going through and feels it just as much as you feel it. So we're going to be afflicted. Here's the second thing I'd bring to your attention. Go back with me down to verse 3 again. So you're going to be afflicted. Number 2, look at verse 3. The plowers plowed upon my back. They made long their furrows. Then he says this, the Lord is righteous. He hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. Let them all be confounded and turn back that hate Zion. Number 2 is this, living for Jesus causes affliction. Notice what it says in verse 5, let them all be confounded and turn back that hate Zion. Living for Jesus causes affliction. There's just afflictions in life in general. But the more you live for Jesus, the more you become the target of it. General afflictions happen to all because we live in this world. Disease and death happens. Struggles and strife, saved or unsaved. No one gets out of it. No one escapes it. Cancer doesn't discriminate. Cancer comes in all kinds of forms to all kinds of people. Struggles and financial setbacks. It happens. That's the general afflictions of life. But there are specific afflictions that come to those who live for Jesus. So let me tell you this. Are you a born-again child of God? Now watch. God's eyes are upon you. You are accepted in the beloved. You don't have to earn His favor. You have His favor. That's the positive. Let me flip the coin over and tell you the other side. Satan hates you. He hates all people, but he especially hates the people of God. There is a hatred he has for us. And so because of that, there's a hatred from Satan, and therefore there's this affliction. They hate us, the world, because they hate Jesus. Now, we don't like that. People are like, well, I don't want to think about the world hating me. I don't want to think about that. But the reality, it is there and it's true. We don't like that, but it is still true that we live in a world that is opposed to our lifestyle. Thank God for our Constitution. Thank God every now and then they actually uphold it. But thank God for our Constitution. If we did not have the guaranteed freedoms under our Constitution, could you imagine how they would treat us? Could you imagine preaching against homosexuality, how they would treat us? Preaching against the transgender goofy stuff that goes on? You know how much the world hates what we preach? How much we preach against this idea that, you know, we're all going to the same goal. You know, here's the Muslims with their God, and here's the Buddhists with their God, and the Hindus with their gods, and here's all these different religions, but we're all going up the same mountain, headed to the same place, and we preach against it and say, if you don't accept Christ, you're going to die and go to hell. The most moral Buddhist will burn forever in hell. The most moral Hindu will burn in hell. The most moral Muslim burns in hell. You must come to Jesus Christ. You know how much the world hates that? We're protected, and I thank God for our Constitution. But it also tells us this, that the world is against our message. They're against who we stand for. They're against what we represent. And the force behind the world is Satan. Satan is against the God of this world, which is Satan, is against the things that we stand for. So they hate us because they hate Jesus. They reject us. Why? Because they rejected Jesus. They are attack us just like they attack Jesus. Turn with me to John 15. I don't want you to think I'm just ranting and raving for nothing. I do have a purpose behind it. John 15. Look with me at verse number 18. Now, I'm going to put a little bit of a finer tip to that in a moment, but I want to convey the fact that we live in a world that's opposed to the things that we stand for. John 15, look with me in verse 18. If the world hate you, you know that it hated me, this is Jesus speaking, before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. If we went along with the world and acted like the world and talked like the world and believed like the world and accepted everything of the world wouldn't have a problem with us. The Lord would, but the world wouldn't. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you're not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. And so, living for Jesus causes specific afflictions that come into our life. They hate us because they hate Jesus. Again, we don't like it. It's true. The Bible clearly tells us this. Now, let me put a little bit of a tip on it, a finer tip on it. I'm not saying everyone in the world hates you. And I'm not saying every person that hates you because you're a Christian. Okay? Sometimes people hate us for other reasons. Sometimes they hate us because we're mean and not nice, and they hate us. And so it's not always our stand for Jesus. So I'm not saying everyone in our world hates us, and I'm not saying every time they hate us it's just for our stand for Jesus. What I am saying is there will come specific afflictions in the life of the people of God because our stand for Jesus. They that live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. The Bible is clear about that. They hated Jesus, they'll hate you. Now watch this. They hated Jesus, but Jesus didn't compromise. And they hate us, and we shouldn't compromise. No matter how much they attack us, no matter how much they try to paint us as extremists, hate-mongering, religious bigots, we should never compromise what we stand for. So let me just make a couple statements. Homosexuality is a sin and always be a sin. It will always be a sin. This the idea that we're going to mutilate. Okay, for adults, I don't believe in the transgender adult stuff either. Okay, but adults doing stupid things is not a new stuff. That's adults doing stupid things is kind of like a lot of adults have done. But when it comes to children, I mean, I'll say it again. I think you ought to take every doctor out that mutilates a child, take them out and okay, this is my opinion. I would have no problem taking them out back as we're digging a nice deep 6-foot hole, I would want to show them the gospel. I'd want to pray with them so they accept Christ. And I will tell them, I will make sure you sleep deep and comfortably in this hole. I have the idea that you, as a doctor, you're going to make your money off of mutilating a child's body. How sick and disgusting is this world? Now, that's the world we live in. And when we stand against those things, we are going to be challenged. We're going to be looked as hate mongers. Listen, that's not hate. That's a love for children. We love them. We don't hate them. We love them. It's the doctor showing the hate. It's not that we don't hate the homosexuals. We love them. They need Jesus. They don't need to be accepted in their sin. They need to be confronted with their need for Jesus Christ. And so because of our stand, there comes afflictions. But the affliction should never be a source or a reason for compromise. Now let me say a few more things and we'll move on to the third point. Satan wants to destroy the godly seed. That's what he wants to do. He wants to do it here in our nation. He wants to do it around the world. He wants to destroy God's people. We are the salt and light. We're the thing that's hindering everything he's trying to accomplish. The world has all of their big meetings. The UN gets together. The Davos dudes all get together and they fly all their jets there and talk about how bad it is for us to drive our SUVs. And they all get together and they plan all of their goals. The one thing that hinders everything is God's people. We're the anchor that's holding everything back. And Satan hates the godly seed. Let me show you what I mean. Go with me back to our text. Look at verse 2. Many a time have they afflicted me from my youth. Now that's said individually, as an individual person, but they're also saying this as a nation. It's a corporate statement as well. So it's not just an individual statement, it's a corporate statement. Satan has hated the godly seed all the way back. You can trace it all the way back to Cain slaying Abel. There's always been this attack against the godly seed. Our job is to stand true without compromise. With love as much as we can, yes. With a desire to reach as many people as we can, yes. But never compromising the truth. Let me show you another verse. Go with me to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 4. When we talk about afflictions and all the things, the answer isn't, okay, let's get our guns and start fighting back. That's not the answer. When we're being attacked for our faith, here's how God says we should respond. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as some strange thing happening to you. But, anyone know what that next word is? Rejoice. In the midst of all of this affliction, in the midst of all of the suffering, all the attacks and all the lies, God says, rejoice. You should be rejoicing that they're attacking you. Because if they're not attacking us, if the world is living as perverted and as weird as they're living, and there's no attack against us, they must think we're on the same side. But when they're attacking me and afflicting me, then I rejoice because this is what the Lord is allowing me to do, to live for Him. But rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings. Just like He suffered, we suffer. That when His glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. Thank you, Jesus, I got to suffer for you. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye. For the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part is evil spoken of, but on your part is glorified. I'm not talking about like the talking heads on TV who are almost talking about fighting and yelling and screaming and you know, fight fire with fire. Don't bring a knife to a gunshot, a gun battle, or whatever they say. Okay, I don't remember all that they say. So I'm not. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not repeating talking points from some news program. I'm saying we are under affliction because we stand for truth. But the answer is not to get mad and fight them. The answer is live for Jesus, win as many as you can, and show the love of Christ. But don't compromise. Let's go back. If you reproach for the name of Christ, happy are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part is evil spoken of, but on your part is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. In other words, if you're suffering because of your sin, that's a whole different story. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian living for Christ, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the ungodly and the sinner appear? Wherefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him in well-doing, as unto a faithful Creator. So I said, number one, you are going to be afflicted. Number two, living for Jesus causes afflictions. So let me give you an old statement. 1600s. Say, well, you know, there used to be a time when Christians got along in the world. The world loved us and we loved them. And man, we just got along. We held hands, sang Kumbaya. It was a beautiful place this world was. That has never been the case. Well, it was. There's two people on the earth. There was an Adam and an Eve. And they hadn't sinned yet. And it was a beautiful place. And then they sinned and everything after that. So in the 1600s, a preacher named John Trapp said this. That first that ever died, died for religion. So early came martyrdom into the world. He's talking about the same thing. He's always after the godly seed. That was the first attack, and it's always been so. So number one, you're going to be afflicted. Number two, living for Jesus causes afflictions. Our answer isn't fighting back and punching back. Our answer is standing for Christ, not compromising, trying to win the lost, trying to show the love of Christ in the midst of all the suffering and rejoicing that we get to suffer for Jesus. And then there's a third point. Go back to Psalms 129. Look with me at verse 4. The Lord is righteous. He hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. He, God, He hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. Let them all be confounded and turn back to hate Zion. Let them be as the grass upon the housetops, which withereth afore it groweth up, wherewith the mower filleth not his hand, nor he that bindeth sheaves his bosom. No, it's gone. It's not enough to gather up. Neither do they which go by say, the blessing of the Lord be upon you. We bless you in the name of the Lord. No blessing upon them, nothing left over of being destroyed. But notice verse 4, the Lord is righteous. He hath cut asunder. This is what the Lord has done. They're not doing it. The Lord is doing this. So you're going to be afflicted. Living for Jesus causes afflictions. And here's the third point. God responds when we are afflicted. The reason that we don't get our guns and start shooting people. The reason we don't do that is because God has a plan. And when we get involved in our own, we short circuit what God is trying to accomplish. God has so designed His will that the afflictions placed upon the righteous will be used by God to further His work in our lives. God works it in such a way that even when afflictions come, even though they hurt, even though there be many of them, they can be shattering afflictions, God has so designed His will that He takes that very thing meant to harm us, that very sword meant to stab us, He takes it and beats it into a plowshare. Now it's a tool to accomplish His will in our lives. And on the flip side, the wicked who do the afflicting wither away and never see God's eternal blessings. God takes the affliction that they're throwing our way and uses to build us and to grow us. And then He Himself deals with them. We see this demonstrated in the life of Job. He is physically devastated, seems to some extent spiritually devastated, especially as we read later in the chapter when he begins asking God a bunch of questions. His 10 children are killed. But at the end of his life, how does it end? Twice as much as began with. God took the same thing meant to hurt him and blessed him and turned it around for His own glory. Not Job's, but for God's glory. We see that in Job's life. We see this in Joseph's life. The very afflictions brought into Joseph's life actually brought Joseph blessing because it took him to Egypt, and now he's the governor, and now he's saving lives based on the initial afflictions caused by his brothers. He said to his brothers, I have a dream, but it was a different dream than the other guys. He said, I've had this dream, and and talk about the different sheaves. Your sheaves bow down to my sheaf. And then he talked about how the stars and the sun and the moon bowed down, and they didn't like that. And they basically said, we're never going to bow down. And then you read a few chapters later, and what do you find the brothers doing? Bowing down. They didn't know it was Joseph. They're bowing down. And when they realized it was Joseph, do you think maybe something clicked in their head? Maybe they said, we remember Joseph talking about this. Let me tell you, do not fret over the affliction. Affliction cannot stop what God's trying to do in your life. You can lose every penny you have. That doesn't stop what God can accomplish in your life. You can lose every friend that you have. You can lose all your health. Nothing can stop God unless you do not live by faith. Because God operates in the realm of faith. As long as you stay true, as long as you keep your eyes on Him, as long as you keep going forward, God can use every arrow as a tool to make you more like Jesus. Isn't that what we want? To be more like Jesus? Well, we do. We just don't want to do it without. We want to do it without the affliction. Do you have the non-affliction mode here? And no, we don't. Because the one we're trying to be like went through afflictions. We see that in the life of Job. We see that in the life of Joseph. And obviously we see it in the life of Christ. You ever consider what it meant when Christ was crucified? Do you think there was celebration by Satan and by others? They killed the Son of God. Satan's an angel. We only know what the Bible tells us, but it would seem like that he knew a whole lot about what was happening. My guess is he knew the plan of God. The plan of God was for the Messiah to come and to give his life. We know he's foreordained. We know he's this lamb slain from the foundation of the world. We know that from the very beginning he's against the godly seed. So it seems like Satan knew what the plan was. Do you think that maybe Satan was celebrating when this happened? He stopped God's plan. You know what fulfilled God's plan? The thing that was used, by Satan to stop God's plan, God used to fulfill his plan. The same thing is true in our lives. Satan cannot stop what God is trying to do. As long as you keep your eyes on Him, keep going, regardless of the affliction. So God responds when we're afflicted. It is often the very afflictions that are the means by which God brings the blessing. I'm going to say it again. It is often the very afflictions that are the means by which God brings the blessing. So the solution is to always keep your eyes and trust the Lord in whatever that time of affliction is. So I'm going to give you one more quote. I quoted Abraham Wright. The second quote was John Trapp. I don't know if I told you that. Here's a third guy, Jeremy Taylor. Again, all these guys in the 1600s. And my point is, what I'm telling you has been preached for centuries because this is the reality that we live in. So here's what Jeremy Taylor said in the 1600s. God fails not to sow blessings in the furrows which the plowers plow upon the back of the church. And that phrasing of the church, Christian saved people. I'll say it again. God fails not to sow blessings in the furrows which the plowers plow upon the back of the church. God uses our afflictions like He used Israel's afflictions against Egypt. Every affliction against Egypt, all of those 10 plagues, that's what I'm talking about, the 10 plagues. Every plague God used to attack the false gods of Egypt. Egypt said, Pharaoh said, who is God that I should let you go? You know what he was saying at the end? Please go, serve the Lord. Because every god, it wasn't simply that Pharaoh was fed up. Every plague was designed to attack a false god of Egypt. At the end of the 10 plagues, every one of their gods had been defeated. And Egypt, Pharaoh's like, okay, you win. Your God is stronger than our God. Go. And that's what God can do. God overcomes all of these afflictions to glorify Himself. God's glorified. Satan is defeated. Believers are blessed. So let's bring it to a close. As the curtain closes on any one generation, any one time span, and then opens on another time span. So here's a generation or a group of people in this time span living. Curtain closes, curtain opens back up. When the curtain reopens, the costumes may have changed. The props may have changed. The background may have changed. And even the actors may have changed. But each play of each generation goes through the same script. It never changes. Same afflictions, same attacks, same challenges. What this psalmist said 3,000 years ago, and what these preachers that I quoted said roughly 400 years ago, is the same thing that's being said to us today. You will have afflictions. You will be afflicted for your faith. But yet, those very afflictions can be the source of God's blessing. The script is in our hands. We have to decide how we're going to live for Jesus during our time. Would you bow your head? Would you